it wasn't until recently, like maybe the past 2 years, that I realized how hard that must have been for her. I don't think I completely understood it until a couple months ago. We actually talked about like what it was like for her, and I, for some reason, I had never really thought to ask that before. But I'd never really asked about what the whole process had been, caring for me and trying to raise me to be a good person, and you know, taking care of all of my medical issues and things like that.
When you love somebody, you just do it. I would do it all over again 100 times over.
Welcome to Health Hats, empowering people as they travel together toward best health. I'm Danny Van Leeuwen, a two-legged, cisgender, old white man of privilege, living in a food oasis who can afford many hats and knows a little bit about a lot of healthcare and a lot about very little. Most people wear hats one at a time, but I wear them all at once. We will listen and learn about what it takes to adjust to life's realities in healthcare's Tower of Babel. Let's make some sense of all of this. Welcome to episode 6 of the series about young adults with complex conditions transitioning from pediatric to adult medicine with Morgan and Amy Gleason. I interviewed Morgan and Amy in the previous 2 episodes. Morgan and Amy sound like pretty normal daughter and mom, growing out of the self-centered teen years into mutually appreciative adults. In this episode, we'll hear about that journey toward respect and shared support, leavened, of course, with humor about the ridiculousness of some of that journey. So thank you guys for taking the time. I don't want to hurt your feelings, Amy, but I got a ton more hits on Morgan's interview than yours.
I'm not surprised.
Oh my God. That's funny.
It is funny. You know, I can't predict what people are going to be interested in. How about we get started since everybody's got busy lives? So I want to thank you, Morgan and Amy, for joining me again. We spoke individually before. I wanted to follow up with some questions from 11 to 20. Your relationship has really changed, which of course it would, 11 to 20. It's just it's like everyday life. But how has it changed in relationship to, Morgan, your managing your health?
Obviously, like you said, 11 to 20 is such a huge jump. In the very beginning, I didn't even understand that, like, what a chronic illness was. I thought that you took some medicine and then like a week later you feel better and you're perfectly fine, good to go. My mom had to do a lot of the caring at the beginning. She obviously managed everything and made sure I took my meds and took me to doctor's appointments and things like that. And as I got older, she actually started pushing me to, what age would you say that was, Mom, that you started?
13 or 14, probably.
Yeah.
And then more at 15, 16, but you were already kind of going there by then.
Yeah, somewhere around then. I really started to learn how to take care of my own health from the very beginning. Or not the very beginning, but when I was able to and understood what was going on. So she started passing a little bit more of responsibility over to me. I just kind of had to learn how to do things, and she always has been helpful and helped me along the way and things like that.
Was it your mom pushing you or you grabbing for control, or was it both?
I think in the beginning it was my mom pushing, but not in a bad way. Like, she just wanted, like, whenever we would go to doctor's appointments, she would make me rehearse, like, over and over in the car what things I wanted to go over. And in the beginning, it was pushing, and I hated that because, you know, every teenager doesn't want to do what they're told, obviously. Like, as I got older, I started to realize how important it was, and then once I hit, like, 15, that's when my video came out and everything, so I got a lot more involved. I think that was really kind of like a big push to get me into taking care of my own health. Although, I was doing some of it beforehand. And I think once I got towards the end of high school, I was kind of like, oh, well, I'm going to be going to college in a couple months. Like, I better know, like, what I'm doing. And that was scary at first. But I always know that I can call my mom and ask her questions if I ever need to.
Do you concur, Amy?
Yeah, I think in the beginning, from my perspective, I had to actually not give too much information in the beginning. I had to kind of dole it out in pieces because it would scare her. Like when she was saying she didn't know that it wasn't going to just be some meds she took and it was going to be all cured. That was a huge shock to her. And that was when I realized, oh, I need to be much more careful how I word things. And, you know, I can't just say, no, you're going to have this for the rest of your life. You have to be kind of like, this is something, you know, as we go along, you'll have ups and downs and, you know, explain it more like in a way that she could understand it. And I had to deal more, I think, in the beginning. She kind of trusted me with the medical part, but more her mental health, I think I had to focus on in the beginning. Her friend group changed because she wasn't doing gymnastics and cheerleading anymore. I had to kind of more help her with life coping and mental health, I think, than actually the physical. And then as we kind of went along, we developed a way to talk about all that stuff, and that wasn't such an issue anymore. And I had to kind of focus more on, we'd go to the doctor and they'd say, well, how are you doing? Fine. Mm-hmm. And so then the doctor thinks, oh, she's doing well, when the last 2 weeks she's been in horrible pain, but that one day she was having a good day. So it's hard to remember, you know, what it was like 2 weeks ago.
Can I add to that? Sorry. When I was, I think around that age, I was very shy in the beginning. I always have been very shy. So I think part of it was that I didn't want to just talk very openly with a complete stranger. I mean, not a complete stranger. I'd been seeing my doctor for like, especially in the beginning, and when it was brand new, I didn't want to talk at all because I was very shy. So I think that was part of it for sure. And then as I got older and I did get more extroverted and able to talk to strangers.
Yeah, you know, I know you're shocked to know this, but I'm an extrovert myself. And I know that when there's a new doc in the mix, I feel like I'm 16 again. What do you mean you want to know about everything? Even though with my primary card, I'll tell her anything. You know, the good, the bad, the ugly, I don't care. You know, I just lay it out.
One thing I really, really struggle with is when I go to the hospital, and I like to go get my infusions and treatments and things over the weekend because it's an overnight stay. So I like to do it over the weekend so I don't miss too much class or things along those lines. A lot of times my doctor isn't on call, so they have a hospitalist come in. And I hate sharing information with them because it seems completely pointless. Like the same hospitalist comes in every time, but I don't particularly like her that much. But so I don't really like to talk to her at all or share anything. So that's kind of like a new thing. Cause I know that she's not going to be the one that's changing my medicine or anything. Like she's not going to be the one changing my doses or tracking my symptoms. She's just kind of there because she has to be, or at least that's my perspective on it.
When I think she was kind of judgy with you in the beginning, right? And you didn't like that. Like she made judgments about you without knowing you. And you kind of were like, well, why should I trust her? I'm not going to talk to her anymore because she's not going to do anything anyway, right?
Yeah, I kind of just, whenever she walks in, I'm kind of like, she's like, so how are you doing? And I'm like, fine. So just like when I was 11. And it's just because I don't like her and I don't get along with her very well. And I think it's pointless.
Amy, you talked some about your concerns about clinical trials and data, about Morgan's privacy and her rights when she was a child. You were making decisions and you were thinking about what were going to be the long-term implications of decisions you were making on her behalf. Morgan, now that you're 20 and you're making your own decisions, are you feeling any implications of decisions that your mom made that you're glad she made, it didn't matter, you wish she hadn't made?
When it comes to my healthcare, I'm pretty odd in this way. I genuinely don't care who has access to my data, or I wouldn't say not care at all, but I'm very open with it. Like I share, like I post pictures of my medical records online on my blog and stuff. So I really don't care so much about privacy. I haven't noticed anything that from when my mom made a decision that has followed me. I can't really think of anything, or at least if there is something, it doesn't bother me. Mm-hmm. Exactly.
I always tried to have a conversation with Morgan about it whenever anything was happening, like, hey, I'm about to share this. Are you okay with that? And then once mm-hmm. that was kind of out, then I didn't really worry about it the second time, you know, because we'd mm-hmm. already kind of talked about it.
Okay.
In clinical trials, Morgan has always said, I will do anything that I can do to make this disease better and to find a better treatment or a cure. She's raised money. She's talked. She's helped other teens that were newly diagnosed. Mm-hmm. So she's always said, you know, clinical research, I'll do it. Yeah. Actually, the very first visit, they took 21 tubes of blood for her, and she was 11.
And they lied to me and told me it was only like 3 or something.
That's
and
true.
They were like, oh, it's just taking a really long time. And I'm like, and I had never gotten my blood drawn before.
Amy, when you spoke about that when we talked, I thought that like this was an area that I had never really thought about. It was opened my eyes and my mind. And I'm wondering, in your guys' community, CureJM, is this a topic of conversation that other people have? Amy, when we are in like the Society of Participatory Medicine or that crowd that we hang with, this is a big topic of conversation. I just don't know if it's translates beyond, you know, crazy advocates like us.
I think the moms talk about it more than probably other people, but it's more for fear of us doing something that they're going to regret us doing later. Mm-hmm. And I don't know that I would expect Morgan to say anything different than I'm fine with it now, because she's been involved in making that decision. It's more 10 years from now, 20 years from now, 30 years from now, who even knows what our healthcare system will be like and what decisions will happen from mm-hmm. data that was shared. And most likely it'll be fine, but you have to make that decision.
Right.
The only time I remember two things is we do a lot of fundraising for CureJM, which when you do fundraising, you tell your story and explain rare disease and why there's no treatments and why we have to raise money to do research and all of that stuff. And I invited a bunch of people from Morgan's school to a fundraiser, like her teachers and stuff. And she was mortified, like off the charts. Like, I can't believe you invited my English teacher to this thing. And I don't know that it was so much about the healthcare data as it was some kind of an invasion of privacy. I'm not exactly sure.
Well, I think one thing is that if you had asked me before the video came out and I started speaking, so when I was younger, I guess in middle school, I would have been like, absolutely don't share anything. But my answer from that to now is very, very different. It took me a long time to open up about it with people that I cared about and people that I knew and friends. That was really hard at first too, because it's very hard to hide an illness that causes so much, like, I don't know the right word, but
disruption.
Yes. Yeah. That would work. And also when I was in middle school, I started prednisone and I got the big puffy face, and I've always been a very small person. And then I leave sixth grade and I come back for seventh in August, and it looks like I've gained like 80 pounds. Like, I still tried to hide it at that point though. I still tried to kind of act like it wasn't that big of a deal or nobody really needed to know or things like that. But then I really think the turning point was kind of when the video happened, or maybe even the months leading up to that. I was getting much more comfortable with talking to strangers and things like that.
Mm-hmm. Well, I would say in the beginning, you didn't want anybody to know. And then actually it was fundraising that you said, okay.
Yeah.
It was like 3 months in or 4 months in, and there was this big contest and you said, okay, you can tell the story and you can use this one picture. So I sent it out, and then you kind of got more comfortable, but then there were still boundaries, which is why I raised the English teacher. Like, I kind of thought, oh, okay, well, if we're going to talk, she was like interviewed by the news and she was in the newspaper. So I was kind of like, okay, well, it's out now. Well, then I found out like, that's not really true. You still have like the English teacher off limits.
I think that it's very different because I still kind of see my public, like, social media posted online me like as a different version than with people that I actually see in like real life and face to face. I was fine with it being posted on Facebook because I think I wasn't going to have to have that conversation with anyone at that time. And I think I didn't want the pity or the sympathy or the, oh, you poor thing, like that kind of deal. Even now, I've kind of, with my friends now, I kind of, whenever I tell someone about it, I do it in a joking way, like, oh, I have this really rare autoimmune disease, and I feel really horrible most of the time, but, you know, it's really great, I love it, and like sarcastically. I've kind of developed, like, coping mechanisms and ways to break the ice, like that I didn't know, that I had to develop over time, and I didn't know how to do that.
Is some of that because people, you may feel awkward about it, but I'll bet other people feel even more awkward about it.
I agree. I think they do feel more awkward because especially people my age and in high school, like in teens and early 20s, like you don't often meet a person who has at 20 years old that has a chronic, like lifelong autoimmune disease. And I think the word disease really freaks people out. I think that's the one thing that, I don't even know, but definitely when I say that, I can kind of just tell by people's expressions. They first look surprised and they kind of look like they not more guarded. I don't want to say they get more guarded and more reserved, but they don't know what to say to that. Like when you say, oh, I have autoimmune disease and I look like pretty normal, healthy, like I have an invisible illness. Like you would never really be able to tell based on looking at me unless you looked at the very close details, like the rash on my hands and things like that. I think that people just, they're shocked and they don't know what to say at first. So I've kind of made it into a humorous, like lighthearted, sarcastic kind of thing.
You want to say something? Say,
when you first went to college, you were pretty open talking to people about it. And then I think you realized it was awkward because you had kind of stepped into a different audience. And then you stopped talking to people about it as much until, you know, you really knew them. And even your roommate didn't know until she was tracking your location one day and she saw she was at the hospital and she's like, hey, are you okay? I see you're at the hospital.
And I'm so, like, oh yeah, it's fine. I'll tell you later. And then I had to explain it to her and everything. But just cause I don't know. I found that it's easier to tell people about it once they cause I think just a lot of young people, they don't deal with disease frequently. Like that's just not something that is very common. So I try to make sure that they know me well enough to see that I'm normal, and I try to make sure that they see that I'm normal and that I'm not like,
so you're normal and you've got these things you're dealing with instead of, because
if I come right out of the gate saying, oh, I have an autoimmune disease, people are gonna be like, oh, okay, like that's a little bit too much information for the first time meeting you. So like but it's also really difficult when people ask me what I want to do, like what I want to do in life. And I say, I want to do public speaking and healthcare. And they're like, oh, how'd you get into that? And then, you know, it's kind of an awkward situation.
Yeah.
But so I guess my point to that, just to sum that up, is I think in different audiences, the amount of data that you share is different, and different points in your life, it changes. And even when you think you have it figured out, you don't always. The one area I think she's never wavered is on research data.
Yeah. You probably both know that, you know, I lost a son. And I think it is way more awkward for people than it is for me.
Yeah.
And I forget, because I wear my life on my sleeve. You know, I blog about it. I podcast about it. I talk about it. It's just, you know, it's my life. I can just see, oh, whoops. Too much information, better back up, or they get all this sympathy, which, you know, I just don't want. See the show notes or my website, www.health-hats.com, for more information or to subscribe or contribute. If you like it, share it. Thanks. Let me ask a different thing. One of the things, Morgan, I heard you talking about when we spoke was your growing awareness of your mother taking care of herself while she's taking care of you. Can you talk a little bit more about how you became aware of, you know, I mean, part of that is just growing out of your teen years where your life isn't just all about you.
Definitely when I was younger, when I was first diagnosed, I was 11 years old. I had no idea what was going on. Like, it was just a complete whirlwind, and I didn't think about anybody but myself. I think I was on a lot of steroids, which made me very angry and very upset. So I would get very agitated and irritated. Yeah, it was the worst. That definitely helped it. My mom would try to do one thing and I would just snap. I would start yelling and crying and like throwing a temper tantrum at like 12 years old. But it was just the steroids. Like, I couldn't do anything about it. It wasn't until recently, like maybe the past 2 years, that I realized how hard that must have been for her. Like, I don't think I completely understood it until a couple months ago. Maybe, I don't remember if it was right after the accident or maybe right before, but we actually talked about like what it was like for her. And I, for some reason, I had never really thought to ask that before, to ask like, I mean, I had a little bit, like, that must have been, like, really scary. Like, I mainly meant just, like, the diagnosis. But I never really asked about what the whole process had been, caring for me and trying to raise me to be a good person and, you know, mm-hmm. taking care of all of my medical issues and things like that. It wasn't until we sat down and talked about that I really understood. And then as I got older and moved out, and I realized I took on a lot more responsibility for my own, like, I had already taken on a lot of it in high school, but when you move out and you're living in an apartment, like, in like two states away, like, you kind of have to take on a whole lot more responsibility. And I go to the doctor's appointments on my own and things like that. So I would sit there and think about, oh, well, I'm doing all of this and I only have to care about myself. And my mom, she had to worry about me, herself, my dad, my siblings, like everything like that, as well mm-hmm. as balancing work and, you know, just taking care of herself. And like, I realized that's like a lot. That's a lot to ask for. And oh, and all during this time, as if she's not amazing enough, she was like starting a company and like building it from the ground up.
That's how you introduced it to me. My mom is an entrepreneur. My mom, she's got a life. She's got more than just me. I mean, that's how you, you broached that when we spoke. And so how's that from your angle, Amy, seeing, was it like welcome that, you know, Morgan was beginning to or understanding the fullness of your commitment? Was that weird?
Actually, I don't know that I've ever heard it said that clearly. As right now, I'm about to cry. But
You're about to cry. Your eyes are tearing.
I mean, we've talked about it, but I've never heard you say it all together like that at one time. It's hard, but you don't really think about it while you're doing it. You just
do it.
Do it. You just put one foot in front of the other, and somehow you make it all work. Yeah. I look back now sometimes, and I don't know how we made it. It's a family, like, just in general. I mean, it puts stress on your marriage. It puts stress on the other kids. It puts stress on your job. And, you know, all the while I wanted to help find a cure and did research stuff. And, you know, like, there's only so much of yourself you can give. And, and at different times, you can give more in areas than others. Mm-hmm. When you love somebody, you just do it. I would do it all over again 100 times over. I think Morgan is so appreciative now when I'll say, oh, I can do that for you. Or can I help with that? And she'll say, you know, no, Mom, it's really okay. I can do this. Or yes, that would help me a lot. Could you help? Mm-hmm. And she's learned to balance that. And then I know, okay, this is something important and I need to drop this and do it right now. Or she's got it. I'm okay. And I can kind of step back.
And I think when I was in high school and teenager and everything, I said I was very self-centered and I thought the whole world revolved around me. And I thought that everyone needed to drop exactly what they were doing at the exact time that I needed them. And, and I mean, part of that's just growing up. I think I realized my mom has a life. I'm not her only commitment. Like, she has so many other things. And you're incredible. I don't know how you did it. Do it.
I feel the same about you.
Last question. You know, managing the medical community for anybody, but especially somebody with complex medical stuff going on and somebody who's supporting them, it's a shit show. It's amazing it works. It's just nuts. How have you found humor for yourselves in this shit show?
All you can do is laugh about things. Like when they get so ridiculous with the healthcare system that, you know, you can't even try to rationalize it or work it out. You just, you know, you kind of have to laugh at it. There are just some things in the healthcare system that are so ridiculous and wild. And like, why would it ever be like that? Who made this? I mean, like, if you were going to get mad about every single thing, like you'd be mad your entire life, or at least I would, because I spend a lot of time in the health, like in hospitals and doctors and things like that.
What do you think is, if you were to pick a couple like real absurdities that you guys have gotten a chuckle over after you're pissed off?
Oh God. I don't know. Actually, here's a recent example. So my doctor just started me on a new medication, and that was in the beginning or the middle of March, and I just got the medication last week. It was like over a month ago now. And so he prescribed the medicine, went to the pharmacy. I was in Florida where I live instead of at school, because I was there specifically for that doctor's appointment. He prescribed me the medicine, and I had to go to the pharmacy to fill it. They said, no, it requires prior authorization. You're going to have to, because it was a controlled substance, so I had to take it. I can't have them transfer it across state lines. So I had to go back, pick up the prescription. When I got to school, I had to go drop it off at the pharmacy. It stays there for, what, around two weeks. In the meantime, we're trying to contact the doctor's office, the insurance company, the pharmacy. We're just, like, trying to talk to someone to see how they can get it pre-authorized and everything. I called the doctor's office. They said that the insurance sent them a form. They filled out the form and sent it back, but I haven't heard anything back. And then the insurance said they sent the form to the doctor, but the doctor didn't fill it out correctly, and they sent him another one. And I'm like, okay, well, y'all are telling two different stories right now, so which one is correct? So eventually we finally get it worked out, and the doctor, the insurance sent the right form. Doctor signed it, sent it back. The insurance denied it. So we went through all of that, and the pre-authorization was denied. And so they were like, here's another list of medications that you could use as that we will pay for as a substitute to this. I was like, okay, great. Call the doctor back. He orders another prescription for a new medication that was on their list. I go to drop it off at the pharmacy.
It had to be mailed.
It had to be mailed. I forgot about that. They mailed me the prescription all the way from Florida to Alabama. I pick up the prescription. I go to the pharmacy. I go to fill it. And the lady's like, okay, great. It'll be about 15 minutes. Just come back whenever. And I'm like, great. So I went and ran a couple of my errands. And while I'm in the middle of one of my errands, I get a phone call, CVS Pharmacy. Hi, yeah, your insurance will not cover this. And I'm like, what do you mean it won't cover it? That's the list that it was literally the list that it was on the list. Like, how? And so thankfully it was a pretty cheap medication compared to the one before, which was like $600. And this one was only $22. I ended up just paying for it out of pocket, and the insurance still won't cover it. So it was really, really frustrating at the time. But when you think about it, that's hilariously ridiculous.
It is hilarious. Yeah, that's a good... Yeah. What were you going to say, Amy?
Well, originally I was going to say when Morgan was in the hospital so much when she was younger, mm-hmm. we would take turns doing skits imitating the healthcare staff and their silly things.
That's true.
We would laugh hysterically. And so, you know, they come in and flip on all the lights. Mm-hmm. You're sleeping? Get up! You know, yeah. We have to do this blood pressure. Even though your blood pressure has been normal the last 22 times we took it, we must take it right now. Give me your arm.
Yeah.
So we would just exaggerate it and be silly and shine a light in the face, you know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it made the hospital visits a little bit more lighthearted and a little bit more fun. So
the other favorite is when they make you drive Like, you know, you live a long way away, you have a test, and you drive there, you wait for an hour, you wait in the room for an hour, you talk to the doctor, oh, your test results are normal.
Like, oh, great, thanks for wasting my time.
And told us that. So we make fun of that one a lot, the wasted time of waiting for normal.
Waiting for normal. Yeah, there must be a skit in that. Yeah, you could, a screenplay, waiting for normal. That's a good, we'll have to work on that one.
But I do think we've used humor a lot. And I can't remember if I told you this story last time. So if I did, just stop me. But okay. One of my favorite stories about Morgan is, I forgot how old she was, maybe 13 or 14. And she got to see her medical record the first time.
No,
yeah. And it said, Morgan is a cheerful something 13-year-old or whatever. And Morgan's like, why does it say that? And I was like, well, they're assessing you as a whole being and your demeanor and your personality and all. That is part of how you're handling things and your health. And so they document like how your mood is and how you act. And Morgan, kind of before that, we were constantly, put your phone down when the doctor comes in. Like, answer their questions. You know, you don't get that much time with them. Tell them what's going on. So ever since she saw that in her note, as soon as the doctor would come in the room, she would put her phone down and the biggest smile you have ever seen. Hi, yes. And she's like, I'm going to make damn sure it says I'm cheerful in that note. She was really, really concerned about
that. Well, now you said in the beginning that it said cheerful, but it said that I was closed off, reserved, or something like that. And then I was like, no, I'm going to make sure it's going to say cheerful. And it was just purely out of spite.
But it goes to show you that having your medical records can also change the way you look at the visits. So she got better care, ironically, because she smiled and put her phone down and engaged in conversation than she did when she was grumpy and didn't want to talk to them. So,
thank you, ladies. It's a pleasure talking to you. This has been a gift for me. Thank you.
Thank you.
Yeah, awesome.
Yeah, good luck on your exams. Thank Amy, you. I'll see you around the block.
See ya.
Take care.
Have a good day.
Bye.
Bye.
As a parent, I remember the moment when my son appreciated that some of the decisions I made actually made some sense and weren't done to purposely mess up his life. I also savor the discussion about the growing sensitivity to how much to reveal about yourself and to calibrate it to the readiness of the person you're with. But most of all, these conversations with the Gleasons and the Snyders show us the growth of love and respect in the young adult and parent partnership. Next Friday, my wife and I are going to Spain. My wife and a couple of her friends are hiking the Camino de Santiago, maybe 100 kilometers in 2 weeks. And since I'm an assistive device kind of guy, two canes or a wheelchair, I'm going to go along, but I'm not hiking. So I'm going to probably get driven from town to town and hang out, and I'm going to try to podcast from there. I'm bringing equipment and I'm learning to use sound equipment in a different situation and capture environmental sounds and just try to tell a story while I'm in Spain. So I'm going to take a break from the series on young adults, and it'll be back in 3 weeks. But this should be fun. So I'm looking forward to sharing it with you.
Follow my blog, podcasts, and resources through my website. See you around the block.